me, the day I'd caught him with blood on his hands. "You're back," he said with relief. I realized that he'd been worried about us, just as everyone worried when someone left the safety of the caves.
"Brought you a gift," Jared said, as he pushed himself free behind me.
He straightened up and reached back for a box. With a flourish, he held it up, displaying the label on the side.
"Heal!" Doc crowed. "How much did you get?"
"Two cases. And we found a much better way to renew our stores than to have Wanda stabbing herself."
Doc did not laugh at Jared's joke. Instead, he turned to stare at me piercingly. We both must have been thinking the same thing. Convenient, since Wanda won't be around.
"Did you get the cryotanks?" he asked, more subdued.
Jared noticed the look and the tension. He glanced at me, his expression impossible to read. "Yes," I answered. 10 of them. It was all the car could hold." While I spoke, Jared yanked on the rope behind him. With a clatter of loose rock, the second box of heal, followed by the tanks, tumbled onto the floor behind him. The tanks clanked like metal, though they were built of no element that existed on this planet. I told him it was fine to treat the empty cryotanks roughly. They were built to withstand much worse abuse than being tugged through a stone channel. They glinted on the floor now, looking shiny and pristine. Doc picked one up, freeing it from the rope, and turned it around in his hands.
10?
The number seemed to surprise him. Did he think it too many? Or not enough?
"Are they difficult to use?"
"No, extremely easy. I'll show you how." Doc nodded, his eyes examining the alien construction. I could feel Jared watching me, but I kept my eyes on Doc. "What did Jeb, Brant, and Aaron say?" I asked. Doc looked up, locked his eyes on mine.
"They're in agreement with your terms."
I nodded, not convinced. "I won't show you unless I believe that."
"That's fair."
Jared glared at us, confused and frustrated.
"What did you tell him?"
Doc asked me, being cautious. "Just that I was going to save the Seeker." I turned to look in Jared's general direction without meeting his gaze. "Doc has promised me that if I show him how to perform the separation, you will give the released souls safe conduct to another life on another planet. No killing." Jared nodded thoughtfully, his eyes flickering back to Doc.
"I can agree to those terms, and I can make sure the others follow through. I assume you have a plan to get them off-planet."
"It will be no more dangerous than what we did tonight. Just the opposite. Adding to the stack rather than taking from it."
"Okay. Did you have a time schedule in mind?" Doc asked.
He tried to sound nonchalant, but I could hear the eagerness behind his voice. He just wanted the answer that had eluded him for so long, I tried to tell myself. It wasn't that he was in a hurry to kill me.
"I have to take the Jeep back. Can you wait? I'd like to watch this."
"Sure, Jared," Doc agreed.
"Won't take me long,"
Jared promised, as he shoved himself back into the vent. That I was sure of. It wouldn't take enough time at all. Doc and I did not speak until the sound of Jared's scrambling exit had faded.
"You didn't talk about Melanie?"
he asked softly. I shook my head. "I think he sees where this is going. He must guess my plan."
"But not all of it.
He won't get a say," I interrupted severely. "All or nothing, Doc." Doc sighed. After a moment of silence, he stretched and glanced toward the main exit.
"I'm going to go talk to Jeb. Get things ready."
He reached for a bottle on the table. The chloroform. I was sure the souls had something better to use. I would have to try to find it for Doc before I was gone. "Who knows about this?"
"Still just Jeb, Aaron, and Brant. They all want to watch."
This didn't surprise me. Aaron and Brant would be suspicious. "Don't tell anyone else. Not tonight."
Doc nodded, then he disappeared into the black corridor. I went to sit against the wall, as far from the prepared cot as I could get. I'd have my turn on top of it all too soon. Trying to think of something besides that grim fact, I realized that I hadn't heard from Melanie since... When was the last time she'd spoken to me? When I'd made the deal with Doc? I was belatedly surprised that the sleeping arrangements by the Jeep today had not elicited a reaction from her. Mel? No answer. It wasn't like before, so I didn't panic. I could definitely feel her there in my head, but she was... ignoring me? What was she doing? Mel, what's going on? No answer. Are you mad at me? I'm sorry about before by the Jeep. I didn't do anything, you know, so it's not really fair. She interrupted me, exasperated. Oh, stop! I'm not mad at you! Leave me alone! Why won't you talk to me? No answer. I pushed a little harder, hoping to pick up the direction of her thoughts. She tried to keep me out, to put the wall in place, but it was too weak from disuse. I saw her plan. I tried to keep my mental tone even. Have you lost your mind? In a manner of speaking, she teased half-heartedly. You think that if you can make yourself disappear, that will stop me? What else can I do to stop you? If you've got a better idea, please share. I don't get it, Melanie. Don't you want them back? Don't you want to be with Jared again? With Jamie? She writhed, fighting the obviousness of the answer. Yes, but I can't... She took a moment to steady herself. I find myself unable to be the death of you, Wanda. I can't stand it. I saw the depth of her pain, and tears formed in my eyes. Love you too, Mel. But there's not room for the both of us here. In this body, in this cave, in their lives. I disagree. Look, just stop trying to annihilate yourself, okay? Because if I think you can do it, I'll make Doc pull me out today. Or I'll tell Jared. Just imagine what he would do. I imagined it for her, smiling a little through my tears. Remember? He said no guarantees about what he would or wouldn't do to keep you here. I thought of those burning kisses in the hall, thought of other kisses and other nights in her memory. My face warmed as I blushed. You fight dirty. You bet I do. I'm not giving up. You've been warned. No more silent treatment. We thought of other things then, things that didn't hurt, like where we would send the Seeker. Mel was all for the Mist's planet after my story tonight, but I thought the planet of the flowers would be more fitting. There wasn't a mellower planet in the universe. The Seeker needed a nice long lifetime eating sunshine. We thought of my memories, the pretty ones, the ice castles and the night music and the colored suns. They were like fairy tales to her. And she told me fairy tales, too. Glass slippers, poisoned apples, mermaids who wanted to have souls. Of course, we didn't have time to tell many stories. They all returned together. Jared had come back through the main entrance. It had taken so very little time. Perhaps he'd just driven the Jeep around to the north side and hidden it under the overhang there. In a hurry. I heard their voices coming, subdued, serious, low, and knew from their tone that the Seeker was with them. Knew that the time had come for the first stage of my death. No! Pay attention. You're going to have to help them do this when I'm... No! But she wasn't protesting my instruction, just the conclusion of my thought. Jared was the one who carried the Seeker into the room. He came first, the others behind. Aaron and Brant both had the guns ready, in case she was only feigning unconsciousness, perhaps, and about to jump up and attack them with her tiny hands. Jeb and Doc came last, and I knew Jeb's canny eyes would be on my face. How much had he figured out already with his crazy, insightful shrewdness? I kept myself focused on the task at hand, Jared laid the seeker's inert form on the cot with exceptional gentleness. This might have bothered me before, but now it touched me. I understood that he did this for me, wishing that he could have treated me this way in the beginning. "Doc, where's the NOPAIN?"
"I'll get it for you," he murmured.
I stared at the seeker's face while I waited, wondering what it would look like when her host was free. Would anything be left? Would the host be empty? Or would the rightful owner reassert herself? Would the face be less repugnant to me when another awareness looked out of those eyes?
"Here you go."
Doc put the canister in my hand.
"Thanks."
I pulled out one thin tissue square and handed the container back to him. I found myself reluctant to touch the seeker, but I made my hands move swiftly and purposefully as I pulled her chin down and put the NOPAIN on her tongue. Her face was very small. It made my hands feel big. Her tiny size always threw me off. It seemed so inappropriate. I closed her mouth again. It was moist. The medicine would dissolve quickly.
"Jared, could you please roll her onto her stomach?" I asked.
He did as I asked, again gently. Just then, the propane lantern flared to life. The cave was suddenly bright, almost like daylight. I glanced up instinctively and saw that Doc had covered the big holes in the roof with tarps to keep our light from escaping. He'd done a lot of preparation in our absence. It was very quiet. I could hear the seeker breathing evenly in and out. I could hear the faster, tenser breathing of the men in the room with me. Someone shifted from one foot to the other, and sand ground against rock under his heel. Their stares had a physical weight on my skin. I swallowed, hoping I could keep my voice normal. "Doc, I need heel, clean, seal, and smooth. Right here." I brushed the seeker's coarse black hair out of the way, exposing the little pink line at the base of her skull. I stared at her olive tan skin and hesitated.
"Would you cut, Doc? I don't want to."
"No problem, Wanda."
I saw only his hands as he came to stand across from me. He set a little row of white cylinders on the cot next to the seeker's shoulder. The scalpel winked in the bright light, flashing across my face.
"Hold her hair out of the way."
I used both hands to clear her neck.
"Wish I could scrub in,"
Doc muttered to himself, obviously feeling underprepared.
"It's not really necessary. We have clean."
"I know,"
he sighed. What he really wanted was the routine, the mental cleansing that the old habits had given him.
"How much room do you need?"
he asked, hesitating with the point of the blade an inch from her skin. I could feel the heat of the other bodies behind me squeezing in to get a better view. They were careful not to touch either of us.
"Just the length of the scar. That will be enough."
This didn't seem like enough to him.
"You sure?"
"Yes."
"Oh, wait." Doc pulled back. I realized I was doing this all backward. I was no healer. I wasn't cut out for this. My hands were shaking. I couldn't seem to look away from the seeker's body.
"Jared, could you get one of those tanks for me?"
"Of course."
I heard him walk the few steps away, heard the dull metallic clunk of the tank he chose knocking against the others.
"What now?"
"There's a circle on top of the lid. Press it in."
I heard the low hum of the cryo tank as it powered on. The men muttered and shuffled their feet, moving away from it.
"Okay, on the side there should be a switch, more like a dial, actually. Can you see it?"
"Yes."
"Spin it all the way down."
"Okay."
"What color is the light on top of the tank?"
It's just turning from purple to bright blue, light blue now."
I took a deep breath. At least the tanks were functional.
"Great. Pop the lid and wait for me."
"How?"
"Latch under the lip."
"Got it."
I heard the click of the latch, and then the whir of the mechanism.
"It's cold."
"That's sort of the point."
"How does it work? What's the power source?"
I sighed. I knew the answers when I was a spider.
I don't understand it now. Doc, you can go ahead. I'm ready.
Here we go, Doc whispered as he slid the blade of the scalpel deftly, almost gracefully, through the skin. Blood coursed down the side of her neck, pooling on the towel Doc had placed underneath.
A tiny bit deeper, just under the edge.
Yes, I see. Doc was breathing fast, excited.
Silver glinted out from the red. That's good. Now you hold the hair.
Doc switched places with me in a smooth, swift movement. He was good at his calling. He would have made quite a healer.
I didn't try to hide what I was doing from him. The movements were too minute for him to have any chance of seeing. He would not be able to do this until I explained.
I slid one fingertip carefully along the back ridge of the tiny silver creature until my finger was almost entirely inserted into the hot opening at the base of the host body's neck. I traced my way to the anterior antennae, feeling the taut lines of the bound attachments stretch tight like harp strings into the deeper recesses of her head. I twisted my finger around the underside of the soul's body, caressing down from the first segment along the other line of attachments, as stiff and profuse as the bristles of a brush. I felt carefully at the juncture of these tight strings, at the tiny joints no bigger than pinheads. I stroked my way about a third of the way down. I could have counted, but that would have taken a very long time. It would be the 217th connection. But there was another way to find it. There it was. The little ridge that made this joint just a bit bigger. A seed pearl rather than a pinhead. It was smooth under my fingertip. I pressed against it with gentle pressure, tenderly massaging. Kindness was always the way of the souls. Never violence. Relax, I breathed. And though the soul could not hear me, it obeyed. The harp strings loosened, went slack. I could feel the slither as they retracted, feel the slight swelling of the body as it absorbed them. The process took no more than a few beats of my heart. I held my breath until I felt the soul undulate under my touch, wriggling free. I let it twist itself a little farther out, and then I curled my fingers gently around the tiny, fragile body. I lifted it, silver and gleaming, wet with blood that was quickly shed from the smooth casing, and cradled it in my hand. It was beautiful. The soul, whose name I'd never known, billowed like a silver wave in my hand, a lovely, feathered ribbon. I couldn't hate the seeker in this form. An almost maternal love swept through me. "Sleep well, little one," I whispered. I turned toward the faint hum of the cryotank, just to my left. Jared held it low and angled, so that it was a simple matter for me to ease the soul into the shockingly cold air that gusted from the opening. I let it slide into the small space, and then carefully relatched the lid. I took the cryotank from Jared, easing it rather than tugging it, turning it with care until it was vertical, and then I hugged it to my chest. The outside of the tank was the same temperature as the warm room. I cradled it to my body, protective as any mother. I looked back at the stranger on the table. Doc was already dusting smooth over the sealed wound. We made a good team, one attending to the soul, the other to the body. Everyone was taken care of. Doc looked up at me, his eyes full of exhilaration and wonder. "Amazing," he murmured. "That was incredible."
"Good job," I whispered back.
"When do you think she'll wake up?" Doc asked.
"That depends on how much chloroform she inhaled."
"Not much."
"And if she's still there." "We'll have to wait and see."
Before I could ask, Jared lifted the nameless woman tenderly from the cot, rolled her face up, and laid her on another, cleaner resting place. This tenderness did not move me. This tenderness was for the human, for Melanie. Doc went with him, checking her pulse, peeking under her lids. He shone a flashlight into her unconscious eyes, and watched the pupils constrict. No light reflected back to blind him. He and Jared exchanged a long glance.
"She really did it,"
Jared said, his voice low.
"Yes,"
Doc agreed. I didn't hear Jeb sidle up next to me.
"Pretty slick, kid,"
he murmured. I shrugged.
"Feeling a smidge conflicted?"
I didn't answer.
"Yeah. Me too, hon. Me too."
Aaron and Brant were talking behind me, their voices rising with excitement, answering each other's thoughts before the questions were spoken. No conflict there.
"Wait till the others hear. Think of the... We should go get them right now. I'm ready. Hold up."
Jeb cut Brant off.
"No soul snatching until that cryotank is safely on its way into outer space. Right, Wanda?"
"Right," I agreed in a firmer voice, hugging the tank tighter to my chest. Brant and Aaron exchanged sour glances. I was going to need more allies. Jared and Jeb and Doc were only three, though certainly the most influential three here. Still, they would need support. I knew what this meant. It meant talking to Ian. Others, too, of course, but Ian would have to be one of them. My heart seemed to slump lower in my chest, to curl limply in on itself. I'd done many things I had not wanted to do since joining the humans, but I couldn't remember any this sharply and pointedly painful. Even deciding to trade my life for the Seekers, that was a huge, vast hurt, a wide field of ache, but it was almost manageable because it was so tied up in the bigger picture. Telling Ian goodbye was a razor-sharp piercing. It made the greater vision hard to see. I wished there was some way, any way, to save him from the same pain. There wasn't. The only thing worse would be telling Jared goodbye. That one would burn and fester, because he wouldn't feel pain. His joy would far outweigh any small regret he might feel over me. As for Jamie, well, I wasn't planning on facing that goodbye at all.
"Wanda!"
Doc's voice was sharp. I hurried to the bed Doc was hovering over. Before I got there, I could see the tiny olive hand fisting and unfisting where it hung over the edge of the cot. The Seeker's familiar voice moaned from the human body. The room went utterly silent. Everyone looked at me as if I were the expert on humans. I elbowed Doc, my hands still wrapped around the tank.
"Talk to her," I whispered.
Hello? Can you hear me, miss? You're safe now. Do you understand me?
She groaned. Her eyes fluttered open, focused quickly on Doc's face. There was no discomfort in her expression. The no pain would be making her feel wonderful, of course. Her eyes were onyx black. They darted around the room until she found me, and recognition was quickly followed by a scowl. She looked away, back to Doc.
"Well, it feels good to have my head back," she said in a loud, clear voice. "Thanks."
Chapter 53. Condemned. The Seeker's host body was named Lacey, a dainty, soft, feminine name. Lacey. As inappropriate as the size, in my opinion. Like naming a pit bull Fluffy. Lacey was just as loud as the Seeker, and still a complainer.
"You'll have to forgive me for going on and on," she insisted, allowing us no other options. "I've been shouting away in there for years and never getting to speak for myself. I've got a lot to say, all stored up."
How lucky for us. I could almost make myself glad that I was leaving. In answer to my earlier question to myself, no, the face was not less repugnant with a different awareness behind it, because the awareness was not so very different in the end.
"That's why we don't like you," she told me that first night,
making no change from the present tense or the plural pronoun.
When she realized that you were hearing Melanie just the way she was hearing me, it made her frightened. She thought you might guess. I was her deep, dark secret.
A grating laugh.
She couldn't make me shut up. That's why she became a seeker, because she was hoping to figure out some way to better deal with resistant hosts. And then she requested being assigned to you so she could watch how you did it. She was jealous of you. Isn't that pathetic? She wanted to be strong like you. It gave us a real kick when we thought Melanie had won. I guess that didn't happen, though. I guess you did. So why did you come here? Why are you helping the rebels?
I explained unwillingly that Melanie and I were friends. She didn't like that.
Why? She demanded.
She's a good person.
But why does she like you?
Same reason. She says for the same reason.
Lacey snorted. Got her brainwashed, huh?
Wow, she's worse than the first one.
Yes,
I agreed. I can see why the Seeker was so obnoxious. Can you imagine having that in your head all the time? I wasn't the only thing Lacey objected to.
Do you have anywhere better to live than these caves? It's so dirty here. Isn't there a house somewhere, maybe? What do you mean we have to share rooms? Chore schedule? I don't understand. I have to work? I don't think you understand.
Jeb had given her the usual tour the next day, trying to explain through clenched teeth the way we all lived here. When they'd passed me, eating in the kitchen with Ian and Janie, he threw me a look that clearly asked why I hadn't let Aaron shoot her while that was still an option. The tour was more crowded than mine. Everyone wanted to see the miracle for themselves. It didn't even seem to matter to most of them that she was difficult. She was welcome, more than welcome. Again, I felt a little of that bitter jealousy. But that was silly. She was human. She represented hope. She belonged here. She would be here long after I was gone.
Lucky you, Mel whispered sarcastically.
Talking to Ian and Jamie about what had happened was not as difficult and painful as I'd imagined. This was because they were, for different reasons, entirely clueless. Neither grasped that this new knowledge meant I would be leaving. With Jamie, I understood why. More than anyone else, he had accepted me and Mel as the package deal we were. He was able, with his young, open mind, to grasp the reality of our dual personalities. He treated us like two people rather than one. Mel was so real, so present to him, the same way she was to me. He didn't miss her because he had her. He didn't see the necessity of our separation. I wasn't sure why Ian didn't understand. Was he too caught up in the potential? The changes this would mean for the human society here? They were all boggled by the idea that getting caught, the end, was no longer a finality. There was a way to come back. It seemed natural to him that I had acted to save the Seeker. It was consistent with his idea of my personality. Maybe that was as far as he'd considered it. Or maybe Ian just didn't have a chance to think it all through, to see the glaring eventuality before he was distracted. Distracted and enraged.
I should have killed him years ago.
Ian ranted as we packed what we needed for our raid. My final raid. I tried not to dwell on that.
No, our mother should have drowned him at birth.
He's your brother.
I don't know why you keep saying that. Are you trying to make me feel worse?
Everyone was furious with Kyle. Jared's lips were welded into a tight line of rage, and Jeb stroked his gun more than usual. Jeb had been excited, planning to join us on this landmark raid, his first since I'd come to live here. He was particularly keen to see the shuttlefield up close. But now, with Kyle putting us all in danger, he felt he had to stay behind, just in case. Not getting his way put Jeb in a foul mood.
"Stuck behind with that creature,"
he muttered to himself, rubbing the rifle barrel again. He wasn't getting any happier about the new member of his community.
"Missing all the fun."
He spit on the floor. We all knew where Kyle was. As soon as he'd grasped how the Seeker worm had magically transformed into the lacy human in the night, he'd slipped out the back. I'd been expecting him to lead the party demanding the Seeker's death. I kept the cryotank always cradled in my arms. I slept lightly, my hand touching its smooth surface. But he was nowhere to be found, and Jeb had quashed the resistance easily in his absence. Jared was the one to realize the Jeep was gone, and Ian had been the one to link the two absences.
"He's gone after Jody," Ian had groaned. "What else?"
Hope and despair. I had given them one, Kyle the other. Would he betray them all before they could even make use of the hope? Jared and Jeb wanted to put off the raid until we knew if Kyle was successful. It would take him 3 days under the best circumstances, if his Jody still lived in Oregon, if he could find her there. There was another place, another cave we could evacuate to, a much smaller place with no water, so we couldn't hide there long. They'd debated whether they should move everyone now or wait. But I was in a hurry. I'd seen the way the others eyed the silver tank in my arms. I'd heard the whispers. The longer I kept the Seeker here, the better chance that someone would kill her. Having met Lacey, I'd begun to pity the Seeker. She deserved a mild, pleasant new life with the flowers. Ironically enough, Ian was the one who took my side and helped hurry the raid along. He still didn't see where this would lead. But I was grateful that he helped me convince Jared there was time to make the raid and get back before a decision was made about Kyle. Grateful also that he was back to playing bodyguard. I knew I could trust Ian with the shiny cryotank more than anyone else. He was the only one I would let hold it when I needed my arms. He was the only one who could see, in the shape of that small container, a life to be protected. He could think of that shape as a friend, something that could be loved. He was the best ally of all. I was so grateful for Ian, and so grateful for the obliviousness that saved him for the moment from pain. We had to be fast, in case Kyle ruined everything. We went to Phoenix again, to one of the many communities that spun out from the hub. There was a big shuttle field to the southeast in a town called Mesa, with several healing facilities nearby. That was what I wanted. I would give them as much as I could before I left. If we took a healer, then we might be able to preserve the healer's memory in the host body. Someone who understood all the medicines and their uses. Someone who knew the best ways to get to unattended stashes. Doc would love that. I could imagine all the questions he'd be dying to ask. First, the shuttle field. I was sad that Jeb was missing this, but he'd have so many other chances in the future. Though it was dark, a long line of small, snub-nosed shuttles drifted into land, while others took flight in an endless stream. I drove the old van while the others rode in the back, Ian in charge of the tank, of course. I circled the field, staying clear of the busy local terminal. It was easy to spot the vast, sleek, white vessels that left the planet. They did not depart with the frequency of the smaller ships. All I saw were docked, none preparing to leave immediately. "Everything's labeled," I reported to the others, invisible in the dark back. "Now this is important. Avoid ships to the bats, and especially the seaweeds. The seaweeds are just one system over. It takes only a decade to make the round trip. That's much too short. The flowers are the farthest, and the dolphins, bears, and spiders all take at least a century to go one way. Only send tanks to those." I drove slowly, close to the crafts. "This will be easy. They've got all kinds of delivery vehicles out here, and we blend in. Oh, I can see a tank truck. It's just like the one we saw them unloading at the hospital, Jared. There's a man looking over the stacks. He's putting them onto a hover cart. He's going to load them..." I drove even slower, trying to get a good look. "Yes, onto this ship. Right into the open hatch. I'll circle back and make my move when he's in the ship." I pulled past, examining the scene in my mirrors. There was a lit sign beside the tube that connected the head of the ship to the terminal. I smiled as I read the words backward. This ship was going to the flowers. It was meant to be. I made a slow turn as the man disappeared into the hull of the ship. "Get ready," I whispered as I pulled into the shadow made by the cylindrical wing of the next enormous ship over.
I was only 3 or 4 yards from the tank truck. There were a few technicians working near the front of the flower-bound vessel, and others farther away out on the old runway. I would be just another figure in the night. I cut the engine and hopped down from the driver's seat, trying to look casual, like I was only doing my job. I went around to the back of the van and opened the door a crack. The tank was right at the edge, the light on top glowing dull red, signifying that it was occupied. I lifted it carefully and closed the door. I kept up an easy rolling pace as I walked to the open end of the truck, but my breathing sped up. This felt more dangerous than the hospital, and that worried me. Could I expect my humans to risk their lives this way? I'll be there. I'll do it myself, just like you would. On the off chance you get your way, that is.
Thanks, Mel.
I had to force myself not to keep glancing over my shoulder at the open hatch where the man had disappeared. I placed the tank gently atop the closest column in the truck. The addition, one among hundreds, was not noticeable.
Goodbye,
I whispered.
Better luck with your next host.
I walked back to the van as slowly as I could stand to. It was silent in the van as I reversed out from under the big ship. I started back the way we'd come, my heart hammering too fast. In my mirrors, the hatch remained empty. I didn't see the man emerge before the ship was out of sight. Ian climbed into the passenger seat.
Doesn't look too hard.
It was very good luck with the timing. You might have to wait longer for an opportunity next time.
Ian reached over to take my hand. You're the good luck charm.
I didn't answer.
You feel better now that she's safe?
Yes. I saw his head turn sharply as he heard the unexpected sound of a lie in my voice. I didn't meet his gaze. Let's go catch some healers, I muttered. Ian was silent and thoughtful as we drove the short distance to the small healing facility. I'd thought the second task would be the challenge, the danger. The plan was that I would, if the conditions and numbers were right, try to lead a healer or two out of the facility under the pretext that I had an injured friend in my van. An old trick, but one that would work only too well on the unsuspecting, trusting healers. As it turned out, I didn't even have to go in. I pulled into the lot just as 2 middle-aged healers, a man and a woman wearing purple scrubs, were getting into a car. Their shift over, they were heading home. The car was around the corner from the entrance. No one else was in sight. Ian nodded tensely. I stopped the van right behind their car. They looked up, surprised. I opened my door and slid out. My voice was thick with tears, my face twisted with remorse, and that helped to fool them.
My friend is in the back. I don't know what's wrong with him.
They responded with the instant concern I knew they would show. I hurried to open the back doors for them, and they followed right behind. Ian went around the other side. Jared was ready with the chloroform. I didn't watch. It took just seconds. Jared hauled the unconscious bodies into the back, and Ian slammed the doors shut. Ian stared at my tear-swollen eyes for just a second, then took the driver's seat. I rode shotgun. He held my hand again.
Sorry, Wanda. I know this is hard for you.
Yes.
He had no idea how hard, and for how many different reasons. He squeezed my fingers.
But that went well, at least. You make an excellent charm.
Too well. Both missions had gone too perfectly, too fast. Fate was rushing me. He drove back toward the freeway. After a few minutes, I saw a bright, familiar sign in the distance. I took a deep breath and wiped my eyes clear.
Ian, could you do me a favor?
Anything you want.
I want fast food.
He laughed.
No problem.
We switched seats in the parking lot, and I drove up to the ordering box. What do you want? I asked Ian.
Nothing. I'm getting a kick out of watching you do something for yourself. This has to be a first.
I didn't smile at his joke. To me, this was sort of a last meal, the final gift to the condemned. I wouldn't leave the caves again.
Jared, how about you?
two of whatever you're having.
So I ordered 3 cheeseburgers, 3 bags of fries, and 3 strawberry shakes. After I got my food, Ian and I switched again so I could eat while he drove. "You," he said, watching me dip a French fry into the shake. "You should try it. It's good." I offered him a well-coated fry. He shrugged and took it. He popped it into his mouth and chewed.
"Interesting,"
I laughed. "Melanie thinks it's gross, too. That's why I'd cultivated the habit in the beginning. It was funny now to think how I'd gone out of my way to annoy her. I wasn't really hungry. I'd just wanted some of the flavors I particularly remembered one more time. Ian finished off half my burger when I was full. We made it home without incident. We saw no sign of the Seeker's surveillance. Perhaps they'd accepted the coincidence. Maybe they thought it inevitable. Wander the desert alone long enough and something bad would happen to you. We'd had a saying like that on the Mists planet. Cross too many ice fields alone and wind up a claw beast's meal. That was a rough translation. It sounded better in Bear. There was a large reception waiting for us. I smiled half-heartedly at my friends, Trudy, Jeffrey, Heath, and Heidi. My true friends were dwindling. No Walter, no Wes. I didn't know where Lily was. This made me sad. Maybe I didn't want to live on this sad planet with so much death. Maybe nothingness was better. It also made me sad, petty as it was, to see Lucina standing beside Lacey with Reed and Violetta on the other side. They were talking animatedly, asking questions, it looked like. Lacey was holding Freedom on her hip. He didn't look especially thrilled about this, but he was happy enough being part of the adults' conversation that he didn't squirm down. I'd never been allowed near the child, but Lacey was already one of them. Trusted. We went straight to the south tunnel, Jared and Ian laboring under the weight of the healers. Ian had the heavier one, the man, and sweat ran down his fair face. Jeb shooed the others back at the tunnel entrance and then followed us. Doc was waiting for us in the hospital, rubbing his hands together absently as if washing them. Time continued to speed up. The brighter lamp was lit. The healers were given no pain and laid out face down on the cots. Jared showed Ian how to activate the tanks. They held them ready, Ian wincing at the stunning cold. Doc stood over the female, scalpel in hand and medicines laid out in a row.
"Wanda?" he asked.
My heart squeezed inward painfully. "Do you swear, Doc? All of my terms? Do you promise me on your own life?"
"I do. I will meet all of your terms, Wanda. I swear it."
"Jared?"
"Yes. Absolutely no killing, ever."
"Ian?"
"I'll protect them with my own life, Wanda."
"Jeb?"
"It's my house. Anyone who can't abide by this agreement will have to get out."
I nodded, tears in my eyes. "Okay, then. Let's get it over with." Doc, excited again, cut into the healer until he could see the silver gleam. He set the scalpel quickly aside. "Now what?" I put my hand on his. "Trace up the back ridge. Can you feel that? Feel the shape of the segments. They get smaller toward the anterior section. Okay, at the end you should feel 3 small, stubby things. Do you feel what I'm talking about?"
"Yes,"
he breathed. "Good. Those are the anterior antennae. Start there. Now very gently roll your finger under the body. Find the line of attachments. They'll feel tight, like wires."
He nodded.
I guided him a third of the way down, told him how to count if he wasn't sure. We didn't have time for counting with all the blood flowing free. I was sure the healer's body, if she came around, would be able to help us. There must be something for that. I helped him find the biggest nodule. "Now rub it softly in toward the body. Knead it lightly." Doc's voice went up in pitch, turned a little panicky.
"It's moving."
"That's good. It means you're doing it right. Give it time to retract.
Wait till it rolls up a bit, then take it into your hand.
Okay. His voice shook.
I reached toward Ian. Give me your hand. I felt Ian's hand wind around mine. I turned it over, curled his hand into a cup, and pulled it close to Doc's operation site. Give the soul to Ian, gently, please. Ian would be the perfect assistant. When I was gone, who else would take such care with my little relatives? Doc passed the soul into Ian's waiting hand, then turned at once to heal the human body. Ian stared at the silver ribbon in his hand, his face full of wonder rather than revulsion. It felt warmer inside my chest while I watched his reaction. "It's pretty," he whispered, surprised. No matter how he felt about me, he'd been conditioned to expect a parasite, a centipede, a monster. Cleaning up severed bodies had not prepared him for the beauty here. "I think so, too. Let it slide into your tank." Ian held the soul cupped in his hand for one more second, as if memorizing the sight and feel. Then, with delicate care, he let it glide into the cold. Jared showed him how to latch the lid. A weight fell off my shoulders. It was done. It was too late to change my mind. This didn't feel as horrible as I'd anticipated, because I felt sure these four humans would care for the souls just as I would. When I was gone.
"Look out!"
Jeb suddenly shouted. The gun came up in his hands, pointed past us. We whirled toward the danger, and Jared's tank fell to the floor as he jumped toward the male healer, who was on his knees on the cot, staring at us in shock. Ian had the presence of mind to hold on to his tank.
"Chloroform!"
Jared shouted as he tackled the healer, pinning him back down to the cot. But it was too late. The healer stared straight at me, his face childlike in his bewilderment. I knew why his eyes were on me. The lantern's rays danced off both his eyes and mine, making diamond patterns on the wall.
"Why?"
he asked me. Then his face went blank, and his body slumped unresisting to the cot. Two trails of blood flowed from his nostrils. "No!" I screamed, lurching to his inert form, knowing it was far too late. "No!" Chapter 54 Forgotten. "Elizabeth?" I asked. "Anne? Karen? What's your name? Come on, I know you know it." The healer's body was still limp on the cot. It had been a long time. How long, I wasn't sure. Hours and hours. I hadn't slept yet, though the sun was far up in the sky. Doc had climbed out onto the mountain to pull the tarps away, and the sun beamed brightly through the holes in the ceiling, hot on my skin. I'd moved the nameless woman so that her face would be out of the glare. I touched her face now lightly, patting the soft brown hair, woven through with white strands, away from her face. "Julie? Brittany? Angela? Patricia? Am I getting close? Talk to me, please?" Everyone but Doc, snoring quietly on a cot in the darkest corner of the hospital, had gone away hours ago. Some to bury the host body we'd lost. I cringed, thinking of his bewildered question, and the sudden way his face had gone slack. "Why?" he'd asked me. I so much wished that the soul had waited for an answer so I could have tried to explain it to him. He might even have understood. After all, what was more important in the end than love? To a soul, wasn't that the heart of everything? And love would have been my answer. Maybe, if he'd waited, he would have seen the truth of that. If he'd really understood, I was sure he would have let the human body live. The request would probably have made little sense to him, though. The body was his body, not a separate entity. His suicide was simply that to him. Not a murder, too. Only one life had ended. And perhaps he was right. At least the souls had survived. The light on his tank glowed dull red beside hers. I couldn't ask for a greater evidence of commitment from my humans than this, the sparing of his life. "Mary, Margaret, Susan, Jill?" Though Doc slept and I was otherwise alone, I could feel the echo of the tension the others had left behind.
It still hung in the air. The tension lingered because the woman had not woken up when the chloroform wore off. She had not moved. She was still breathing, her heart was still beating, but she had not responded to any of Doc's efforts to revive her. Was it too late? Was she lost? Was she already gone? Just as dead as the male body? Were all of them? Were there only a very few, like the Seeker's host, Lacey, and Melanie, the shouters, the resistors, who could be brought back? Was everyone else gone? Was Lacey an anomaly? Would Melanie come back the way she had? Or was even that in question? I'm not lost, I'm here. But Mel's mental voice was defensive. She worried, too. Yes, you are here, and you will stay here, I promised. With a sigh, I returned to my efforts. My doomed efforts? I know you have a name, I told the woman. Is it Rebecca, Alexandria, Olivia? Something simpler, maybe? Jane, Jean, Joan? It was better than nothing, I thought glumly. At least I'd given them a way to help themselves if they were ever taken. I could help the resistors, if no one else. It didn't seem like enough. You're not giving me much to work with, I murmured. I took her hand in both of mine, chafed it softly. It would be really nice if you would make an effort. My friends are going to be depressed enough. They could use some good news. Besides, with Kyle still gone, it will be hard to evacuate everyone without having to carry you around, too. I know you want to help. This is your family here, you know. These are your kind. They're very nice. Most of them. You'll like them. The gently lined face was vacant with unconsciousness. She was quite pretty in an inconspicuous way, her features very symmetrical on her oval face. 45, maybe a little younger, maybe a little older. It was hard to tell with no animation in the face. They need you, I went on, pleading now. You can help them. You know so much that I never knew. Doc tries so hard. He deserves some help. He's a good man. You've been a healer for a while now. Some of that care for the well-being of others must have rubbed off on you. You'll like Doc, I think. Is your name Sarah? Emily? Kristen? I stroked her soft cheek, but there was no response, so I took her limp hand in mine again. I gazed at the blue sky through the holes in the high ceiling. My mind wandered. I wonder what they'll do if Kyle never comes back. How long will they hide? Will they have to find a new home somewhere else? There are so many of them. It won't be easy. I wish I could help them, but even if I could stay, I don't have any answers. Maybe they'll get to stay here, somehow. Maybe Kyle won't mess up. I laughed humorlessly, thinking of the odds. Kyle wasn't a careful man. However, until that situation was resolved, I was needed. Maybe if there were seekers looking, they would need my infallible eyes. It might take a long time, and that made me feel warmer than the sun on my skin, made me feel grateful that Kyle was impetuous and selfish. How long until we were sure we were safe? I wonder what it's like here when it gets cold. I can barely remember feeling cold. And what if it rains? It has to rain here sometime, doesn't it? With all these holes in the roof, it must get really wet. Where does everyone sleep then, I wonder? I sighed. Maybe I'll get to find out. Probably shouldn't bet on that, though. Aren't you curious at all? If you would wake up, you would get the answers. I'm curious. Maybe I'll ask Ian about it. It's funny to imagine things changing here. I guess summer can't last forever. Her fingers fluttered for 1 second in my hand. It took me by surprise because my mind had wandered away from the woman on the cot, beginning to sink into the melancholy that was always conveniently near these days. I stared down at her. There was no change. The hand in mine was limp, her face still vacant. Maybe I'd imagined the movement. Did I say something you were interested in? What was I talking about? I thought quickly, watching her face. Was it the rain? Or was it the idea of change? Change? You've got a lot of that ahead of you, don't you?
You have to wake up first, though.
Her face was empty, her hand motionless.
So you don't care for change. Can't say that I blame you. I don't want change to come either. Are you like me? Do you wish the summer could last?
If I hadn't been watching her face so closely, I wouldn't have seen the tiny flicker of her lids.
You like summertime, do you? I asked hopefully.
Her lips twitched.
Summer?
Her hand trembled.
Is that your name? Summer? Summer? That's a pretty name.
Her hand tightened into a fist and her lips parted.
Come back, Summer. I know you can do it. Summer, listen to me, Summer. Open your eyes, Summer.
Her eyes blinked rapidly.
Doc, I called over my shoulder. Doc, wake up.
Huh?
I think she's coming around. I turned back to the woman. Keep it up, Summer. You can do this. I know it's hard. Summer, 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 open your eyes.
Her face grimaced. Was she in pain?
Bring the no pain, Doc. Hurry!
The woman squeezed my hand, and her eyes opened. They didn't focus at first, just whirled around the bright cave. What a strange, unexpected sight this place must have been for her.
You're going to be all right, Summer. You're going to be fine. Can you hear me, Summer?
Her eyes wheeled to my face, the pupils constricting. She stared, absorbing my face. Then she cringed away from me, twisting on the cot to escape. A low, hoarse cry of panic broke through her lips.
No, 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 she cried. No more.
Doc!
He was there on the other side of the cot, like before when we were operating.
It's okay, ma'am, he assured her. No one is going to hurt you here.
The woman had her eyes squeezed shut, and she recoiled into the thin mattress.
I think her name is Summer.
He flashed a look at me and then made a face.
Eyes, Wanda, he breathed.
I blinked and realized that the sun was on my face.
Oh.
I let the woman pull her hand free.
Don't, please, the woman begged. Not again,
shh, Doc murmured.
Summer? People call me Doc. No one's going to do anything to you. You're going to be fine.
I eased away from them into the shadows.
Don't call me that, the woman sobbed. That's not my name. It's hers. It's hers. Don't say it again.
I'd gotten the wrong name. Mel objected to the guilt that washed through me. It's not your fault. Summer is a human name, too.
Of course not, Doc promised. What is your name?
I don't know, she wailed. What happened? Who was I? Don't make me be someone else again.
She tossed and thrashed on the cot.
Calm down. It's going to be okay, I promise. No one's going to make you be anyone but you, and you'll remember your name. It's going to come back. Who are you? She demanded. Who's she? She's like I was. I saw her eyes. I'm Doc, and I'm human, just like you. See?
He moved his face into the light and blinked at her.
We're both just ourselves. There are lots of humans here. They'll be so happy to meet you.
She cringed again.
Humans! I'm afraid of humans!
No, you're not.
The person who used to be in your body was afraid of humans. She was a soul, remember that? And then remember before that? Before she was there? You were human then, and you are again.
I can't remember my name, she told him in a panicked voice.
I know. It'll come back. Are you a doctor? I am.
She was too, a healer like a doctor. She was Summer Song. Who am I?
We'll find out. I promise you that.
I edged toward the exit. Trudy would be a good person to help Doc, or maybe Heidi, someone with a calming face.
She's not human, the woman whispered urgently to Doc, her eye caught by my movement. She's a friend. Don't be afraid. She helped me bring you back.
Where is Summer Song?
She was scared. There were humans. I ducked out the door while she was distracted. I heard Doc answer the question behind me.
She's going to a new planet. Do you remember where she was before she came here?
I could guess what her answer would be from the name.
She was
a bat?
She could fly. She could sing. I remember. But it was not here. Where am I?
I hurried down the hall to find help for Doc. I was surprised when I saw the light of the great cavern ahead, surprised because it was so quiet. Usually you could hear voices before you saw the light. It was the middle of the day. There should have been someone in the big garden room, if only crossing through. I walked out into the bright noon light, and the giant space was empty. The fresh tendrils of the cantaloupe vines were dark green, darker than the dry earth they sprang from. The earth was too dry. The irrigating barrel stood ready to fix that, the hoses laid out along the furrows, but no one manned the crude machine. It sat abandoned on the side of the field. I stood very still, trying to hear something. The huge cavern was silent, and the silence was ominous. Where was everyone? Had they evacuated without me? A pang of fear and hurt shot through me. But they wouldn't have left without Doc, of course. They would never leave Doc. I wanted to dart back through the long tunnel to make sure Doc had not disappeared, too.
They wouldn't go without us either, silly. Jared and Jamie and Ian wouldn't leave us behind.
You're right, you're right. Let's check the kitchen. I jogged down the silent corridor, getting more anxious as the silence continued. Maybe it was my imagination and the loud thumping of my pulse in my ears. Of course there must be something to hear. If I could calm down and slow my breathing, I'd be able to hear voices. But I reached the kitchen and it was empty too, empty of people. On the tables, half-eaten lunches had been abandoned, peanut butter on the last of the soft bread. Apples and warm cans of soda. My stomach reminded me that I hadn't eaten at all today, but I barely noted the twist of hunger. The panic was so much stronger. What if we didn't evacuate soon enough?
No, Mel gasped.
No, we would have heard something. Someone would have,
or there would be,
they'd still be here looking for us. They wouldn't give up until they checked everywhere, so that can't be it.
Unless they're looking for us now.
I spun back toward the door, my eyes darting through the shadows. I had to go warn Doc. We had to get out of here if we were the last two.
No! They can't be gone.
Jamie, Jared. Their faces were so clear, as if they were etched onto the insides of my eyelids. And Ian's face, as I added my own pictures to hers. Jeb, Trudy, Lily, Heath, Jeffrey.
We'll get them back, I vowed. We'll hunt them down one by one and steal them back. I won't let them take my family.
If I had had any doubts where I stood, this moment would have erased them. I'd never felt so fierce in all my lives. My teeth clenched tight, snapping together audibly. And then the noise, the babble of voices I'd been so anxiously straining to hear, echoed down the hall to us and made my breath catch. I slid silently to the wall and pressed myself into the shadow there, listening.
The big garden. You can hear it in the echoes.
Sounds like a large group.
Yes. But yours or mine?
Ours or theirs, she corrected. I crept down the hall, keeping to the darkest shadows. We could hear the voices more clearly now, and some of them were familiar. Did that mean anything? How long would it take trained seekers to perform an insertion? And then, as I reached the very mouth of the great cave, the sounds became even clearer and relief washed through me, because the babble of voices was just the same as it had been my very first day here, murderously angry. They had to be human voices. Kyle must be back. Relief warred with pain as I hurried into the bright sunlight to see what was going on. Relief because my humans were safe, and pain because if Kyle was already safely back, then...
You're still needed, Wanda, so much more than I am.
I'm sure I could find excuses forever, Mel.
There will always be some reason. Then stay with you as my prisoner?
We stopped arguing as we assessed the commotion in the cavern. Kyle was back, the easiest one to spot, the tallest in the crowd, the only one facing me. He was pinned against the far wall by the mob. Though he was the cause of the angry noise, he was not the source of it. His face was conciliatory, pleading. He held his arms out to the sides, palms back, as if there was something behind him he was trying to protect.
"Just calm down, okay?"
His deep voice carried over the cacophony.
"Back off, Jared, you're scaring her!"
A flash of black hair behind his elbow, an unfamiliar face with wide, terrified black eyes, peeked around at the crowd.